Welcome to another exciting episode of Goth Girl Horror, the Hack Slash podcast. I am your host, Dr. Chris, and tonight on Hack Slash, we have another Christopher on the show with us. We have letterer Christopher Crank, who has been working on Hack Slash for many, 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 many years. In fact, Chris, do you remember what the first issue of Hack Slash was that you started?
I'm trying to look that up now because I'm not really sure. I think it was when it was still with Devil's Due. Yeah, before Tim took it, the image. But I'm trying to find the actual, I'm looking at my back files and stuff, trying to find the actual number. I'm gonna say it was, sorry, this is taking a second.
I can also message Tim if he responds. Let's see. He might not remember. He may be like, what?
Oh. Wow, that was earlier than I thought. It was issue 7 was when I started.
Issue 7 of the ongoing?
Of the
The
regular
first
series.
ongoing? Okay,
Yeah.
gotcha. Cool. Well, where did you get your start in lettering for? And do you do more than just lettering?
Oh wait, that's not true. I don't think it was. No, it was either issue 7 or issue 8, sorry. How did I get my start in lettering? Well, I was working at Devil's Due, like from the time Devil's Due started in 99, 2000, whenever it was. But I was just working. I mean, we were a small company then, so we were all kind of wore a bunch of different hats, you know. And so I did some lettering then, as like corrections, and if I had to fill in for something like one of the smaller books or something like that needed to get done real fast, I'd letter. But I really didn't actually start lettering full time. Oh, and we did a trauma thing that I lettered my story in before I actually started lettering. So I guess my first real lettering thing was this trauma story. And like maybe 05 or 06. And but then I started full-time lettering in 2007, I think, when Devil's Due was going through a restructuring and a bunch of us got laid off, and I wanted to stay working in comics essentially, so I started lettering. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it's not a real exciting story or anything.
How did you stay on with Tim Seeley for as long as you have? Because you've lettered more issues of Hack Slash than anyone else, I think.
Probably. I mean, there's been like there was a recent series that was last year, I think, from Image that like I didn't have anything to do with. But usually, if Tim's working on it, I've been lettering it. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we worked together at Devil's Due. We were friends, you know. And he doesn't have to worry about getting into arguments with me or anything, I guess, you know. So yeah, that's probably how I managed to stay on this long.
Yeah, so every time I was reading an issue of Hack Slash and we're reading up the credits at the beginning of the podcast before we get to the synopsis, it's always like letters by Crank, letters by Crank, letters by Crank. And I was like, I gotta have this Crank guy on the show. His name's like Madonna or Hulk.
Yeah, I just when I started lettering, people were all like we tended to refer to each other by our last names a lot at work, and so I always called Tim just Seely, and everybody just called me Crank. So when I started working, I wanted to add a little extra excitement to it, so I put the exclamation point at the end. But yeah, it's just my last name, like my real last name.
As a comic book I guess this now is this your full-time profession, being a letterer?
Yeah, I mean, I've done some design work and I do some stuff here and there, like on the side. But I guess my main thing is I'm a comic book letterer. It's, you know, how I pay the mortgage and stuff. Like,
And you have your do, what's there's a book that I found that you're attached to, Curse Words. I'm not familiar with that one.
oh yeah, that's another. It's Ryan Brown and Charles Soule. They've done a bunch of things together, and I've lettered a bunch of their stuff too. That was another Image book. Curse Words was about basically a wizard practicing real life wizard comes to our reality and hires himself out basically to grant wishes. And it turns into this big weird story about a universe in a bottle and stuff. It's very typically like Ryan Brown and Charles Soule Strange. Like they've also worked on 8 Billion Genies, and Ryan Brown, like he has his own thing called God Hates Astronauts, which is just this, I don't know how to describe it honestly. It's got like superheroes and stuff in it, but it's bizarro, I guess. Very, 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 very typical of his humor.
Yeah, it looked really interesting. Who publishes that?
Yeah, that was all Image. Image too, yeah. I think I remember Curse Words. I think Curse Words and 8 Billion Genies both have been optioned for like Amazon to do some sort of serialized thing with or something
Oh,
like
you mean
that.
like the 30 million times that Hack Slash has as well?
Yeah, I mean Hack Slash has been, I think I still got a script on my file from like 2007 or 8 or something like
Oh,
that.
wow, really?
Yeah. There was because they were working something up back then. I mean, that thing was optioned not long after it came out, and then it just kind of got kicked around
I
for a
don't
while.
understand how hard it is to do a goth chick and some giant guy or whatever going around, you
I
know,
mean,
going out. I just like, this sounds like the simplest, easiest thing to do with no CGI, low budget.
especially given the fact that, like Supernatural lasted for what, 12, 13 seasons?
15 seasons.
15 seasons. There you go.
It's, I don't understand. It's like, how can nobody do hack slash correctly? I
Yeah.
don't get it.
It always kind of boggled me too, and it
I mean,
just
I'm sure
seemed
Tim is
like
always like, I don't understand.
yeah, I mean he probably has to kind of compartmentalize it, I'm gonna guess, so he doesn't have to think about it all the time, you know.
Right, and I'm sure the next time a studio picks it up, he can't like be like outspoken being like, well, I hope it gets done this time. He's gonna be like, yay, we're doing it.
I'm gonna guess. I mean, I don't want to speak for Tim, but yeah.
I'm not gonna speak for Tim either, but based on a comment I made on Twitter one time about a studio, he came back to me and was like, dude, just to let you know, that might be a studio who's interested in Hack Slash.
I thought somebody told me recently that not anybody official or like
I had like an
through.
opinion about a movie they were putting out, let's just say.
Oh, I thought somebody mentioned to me recently that has nothing to do with any of that, like is just a person that watches movies and stuff, said that he had heard something that they were doing something with Hack Slash next year or something. But
Well, Revival, isn't that becoming a thing?
yeah,
Isn't
that
that a
is
thing?
too. Yeah.
Okay,
That
so
and that
yeah, I
but
mean,
that's been kicked around for a long time
right.
too.
Listen, until I see casting and I see photos from the set, I don't believe it. I mean, look how long it's taken to make Blade.
Yeah. Well, I
Blade's
mean,
about a
Lee.
black guy who stabs people in the chest. You can't make that into a movie, Kevin Feige.
At least Blades actually had some media life, you know. I mean.
God, the original movie only cost like $70 million to make back in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't really, I mean, I have no idea how Hollywood actually works. So I'm halfway convinced maybe people in Hollywood don't know how Hollywood works, but it's a very strange process, I know. I think they, what was a term I heard? I think there's a term for it, like studio, not studio hell, something hell, where stuff just, takes forever to ever get done. And sometimes things never get done, or they get partially done and shelved.
Yeah, tell me about it. As a letterer, I mean, I've tried to like kind of letter my own book and comic book, and it looks okay, but I definitely pass it on to someone to kind of give it a tweak. What are some of the steps that you got to keep an eye out for? Is it just a matter of like making sure the font looks good in the bubbles to read correctly?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of little things because it's partly a design problem. You got to work with what you're given, and as far as the art goes, so you want to try to avoid covering important elements in the panels. And sometimes that's really hard depending on who the artist is, because like some artists, they draw more than other artists do, so the panels fill up more. Because there was one time I remember lettering something where there were a whole bunch of gags going on in it, and there was so much stuff in there, and then dialogue had to be fit somewhere, so I wound up covering up. I felt bad about it. I wound up covering up a bunch of gags because they weren't necessarily important to the plot, and the letters had to go somewhere. But you try to avoid that whenever possible. And you try to, I don't know, kind of fit your work to the art a little bit as far as line weights and the style of the font you're using. Because some fonts lend themselves more to, say, an indie vibe or a cartoony vibe or something, as opposed to like a superhero vibe, or I don't know, a noir vibe or something. So yeah, there's just a lot of little design decisions you have to make. Matching your effects colors and caption colors to the artwork instead of just picking random stuff on your own, things like that.
Is there any kind of program you use?
Yeah, I mean it's I work all digitally, but it's my main program is Adobe Illustrator, but I mean, there's other stuff in there, but that's just what I learned on. So I keep using Adobe Illustrator. And then I got like a bunch of custom brushes and stuff I use to make sound effects. And I keep a big library of typefaces, things like that. But yeah, it's mostly based in Adobe software.
I wonder what they use like before the digital age of lettering and coloring and things like that. I mean, was like I'm assuming it's like a typewriter maybe, like, or word pro even before the word processor. I'm assuming it was the typewriter was used
No.
against the bubbles, right? Because they didn't hand draw that in.
Oh no, comic book lettering traditionally is hand drawn. Yeah.
Oh wow, okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, if you find old pieces of art, you can actually find old pieces of art where the either the lettering's on the board or it's pasted onto the board. But it's yeah, it was all done by hand. I mean, unless you get into things like I'm trying to think like the old Mad comics, they just used probably like typesetting because those I mean, if you look at that, you can tell it doesn't look like a comic book lettering thing. Because they usually used like rectangular balloons and that real sans serif type, almost looked like Helvetica or something, you know. But yeah, like any old Marvel comic or DC comic or whatever, back in like pre, I mean, it's, you know, this is up into the early 90s. I mean, and there's still people that hand letter comics because it does have a different look. But yeah, right around was it in the 90s somewhere where I think digital lettering overtook hand lettering.
When is well, people collect comics that you've worked on, and you must go to you must go to conventions with Tim sometimes, or other conventions with other people that you collaborate with. But as a collector yourself, what do you collect?
I don't really collect comics anymore.
Ah, it just got did you just get disenfranchised with the whole industry?
Well, part of it is it's like anything, I guess. It's not like this for everybody. It was just one of those things where I was working so much on them, I didn't really have time to read others ones. At least I didn't have time to keep up with the current stuff. I still go back and I read like I buy trade paperbacks now if I'm gonna read something old, mostly, unless it wasn't ever released in a trade paperback, then I'll track down issues. But it's not really something where I'm constantly collecting a certain thing, or where I keep up with a certain title over
Yeah.
time. Like last year or the year before, I bought the a couple of those volumes of where they were releasing old Marvel stuff, and I bought like the New Defenders, like the collections of those. And more recently, like I bought there was a graphic novel called Pizzeria Kamikaze, which they made a movie out of called Wrist Cutters
Huh.
several years ago. And
Wow.
I went and tracked down that graphic novel because I wanted to read it.
Dark.
Yeah, it's about a basically like when you kill yourself, you go over to an afterlife that is basically the same place you're from, just crappier. And it's all kind of grim and dark and good story, though, real pretty story. But yeah, stuff like that. Or I try to every once in a while I try to catch something new just to stay current, like with what I'm reading. But it's kind of hard for me to do that. I just get so busy and locked up on what I'm doing. Yeah.
I said to myself recently, like, I really wanted to cut back on my comic books, and then Marvel launches this Blood Hunt vampire storyline with like 64 freaking tie-ins and whatever. And yeah, some of them are regular books that I'm already reading, or at least they would be miniseries of connected to things I'm reading, like Spider-Man has a miniseries. He has a comic book. He has a plot. He has an issue in his main book of Amazing Spider-Man, and then it says to be continued in the miniseries. And it's like, why did you do that? Oh, it's because the 50th issue was coming out from this volume, so you can't interrupt your flow of what's happening in the normal Spider-Man book for a vampire hijinks.
Yeah, I remember because you know I'm not exactly old, but I'm not young either. But I remember
You look
reading
young in your pictures.
I remember reading the first Secret Wars when it came out,
Oh,
and
that's easy. That's just Secret Wars, right? That was there were no tie-ins other than like the book at the last page of every character that would appear in that.
yeah, and I kind of think back to those days. I'm like, well, that was an easy crossover, you know? Like.
Right. And then
You,
like DC is about to launch Absolute Power, and it's only four issues. But there's a Alpha issue and an Omega issue that bookends it. So it's like, okay, that was actually six issues. Oh, and then there's like all these tie-ins. It's like, okay, guys, you're trying to pull the wool over our eyes thinking it's just four issues written by Mark Waid. But there is a ton of tie-ins to this storyline where Amanda Waller wipes out the powers of the DC universe.
I tell you, I'm actually going to blame the Matrix on that. Because in the early 2000s, when they launched this, I mean, it was essentially a promotion gimmick, but they, besides having the movie franchise, they put out like an animated thing, they put out a comic book thing, they put out online stuff and online shorts. And like, if you didn't actually read all that stuff, you were missing parts of the story. It wasn't like you couldn't, you know, I mean, you could still watch the movies without them, but stuff would happen in the movies that kind of necessarily you didn't quite get unless you had taken part in some of this other stuff that they did, you know.
Right,
But
right. They did that with Dead Space as well. When Dead Space came out, there was a bunch of tie-in media for it, the first video game,
yeah,
back
so
in like 2008, 2009.
I mean, once that stuff proved that you could capture the audience's attention across multiple points, why not do it, I guess, you know. It makes good business sense for the companies. So
Basically. Well, hey, Chris, I really do appreciate you coming on to talk to us a little bit about the process of being a letterer and some of the other stuff you've done.
not a problem.
Like I said, I've been following your stuff for a while through Hack Slash.
Well, thanks for, you know, reading it.
Absolutely. Are you on any? You're on like social medias and stuff like that, right?
Not so much these days. I've been in a slow withdrawal over the past couple of years.
Probably for the better.
It was a mental health thing. Like, I was getting too worked up by stuff going on in real life, or well, on online life, I guess. So I mean, I do still have an Instagram account, but I haven't posted to it in a long time. And if I do start posting to it again, it's probably just going to be album covers of stuff I've been listening to be honest.
I got you. Well, hey man, again, I appreciate you coming on the show to give us a chat on the on Goth Girl Horror, the Hack Slash podcast.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
In addition to the interview with Chris Crank, I also thought I would go over Hack Slash Kill Your Idols, which came out recently. This is a collection of short stories that appeared in the 30th anthology Image comic series, with other short stories from throughout the Image universe, including The Walking Dead, Spawn, and others. In this story, we have characters such as Super Patriot, Cabot and Bloodstrike, and Shadowhawk all appearing. Super Patriot was created by Eric Larson, Cabot and Bloodstrike was created by Rob Liefeld, and Shadowhawk was created by Jim Valentino, all of which are original Image comic book characters when Image Comics was first founded back in 1992 with the launch of Youngblood number 1, followed by Spawn number 1, Shadowhawk number 1, Savage Dragon number 1, Wildcats number 1, and so on. Shadowhawk's first appearance was in Youngblood number 2, again as created by Jim Valentino, and guest starred in the Youngblood series created by Rob Liefeld. Super Patriot first appeared in Savage Dragon number 1, July 1992. The big thing about these two characters is rather unique is that Super Patriot is kind of like a cyborg version of Captain America, as he had been around for an incredibly long time, and was basically like a super soldier back in World War II who fought Nazis and Hitler. And Shadowhawk was very unique in the fact that he was a black man with AIDS, which was very controversial material at the time in the early 90s, as the AIDS epidemic was basically really kind of like at a fever pitch with people worried how you could catch it. Bloodstrike's first appearance was in Bloodstrike number 1, once again, as I said, created by Rob Liefeld, Eric Stephenson, and Dan Fraga. Dan Fraga, who I've actually had on the podcast and on my radio show, as he worked with Tim Seeley on Masters of the Universe, the multiverse of the Masters of the Multiverse, Masters Multiverses of the Universe, but that multiverse miniseries that Tim Seeley worked on. And I believe Cabot's first appearance was Darker Image number 1, volume 1, which was just kind of like a standalone onto itself series. The main story, we have script layouts by Tim Seeley, art by Stefano Caselli with Dan Leister. Leister has been on the show if you want to go check out his interview. Coloring by Kurt Michael Russell, lettering by Crank. Cover A was by Tim Seeley and Kurt Michael Russell. Cover B was by Stephen Kurt Kurth and Kurt Michael Russell. And the 20th anniversary cover C was by Daniel Ostrozowski. I have cover A, which has Cassie and
Cassie standing over, no Vlad actually. I was gonna say Cassie and Vlad, but has Cassie standing over the down bad guy. Behind her, we have the Image comic characters that she teams up with. Cassie and Vlad have just taken out a new slasher, and they happen upon Super Patriot. These little stories, by the way, are only about maybe 1 6 pages each. So you have a collection of about 30 stories with 6 pages each, which collects to about a 48 page one shot, which isn't bad, as you get the 48 page one shot for $4.99. And of course, the part of the 20th anniversary of Hack Slash. Along the way, we also meet up with Cabot and then Shadowhawk. This is, by the way, the new Shadowhawk, not the original Shadowhawk. I believe that character has passed away, and these stories are in continuity with their respective universes. So that means Cassie is running around in the Eric Larson universe. I don't think Spawn would have appeared because of the separation of the Image universe into their own separate continuities. It was a big storyline where this happened, and it allowed it to explain why Gen 13 and Wildcats are now in part of the Wildstorm DC adjacent universe. But with Super Patriot here, I'm led to believe that this is one of the reformatted universes, because Eric Larson, Savage Dragon, has a complicated history with the universe being destroyed and then rebuilt again. But with Super Patriot here, I'm going to believe this is part of the regular ongoing Savage Dragon continuity. I just want to believe that. At one point, there was a joint Image universe, but it got very much disconnected due to just a lot of the infighting and the separating of different artists. There was a big blowout with Rob Liefeld in the mid to late 90s, which they have since patched things up, and he's welcomed back into the fold. But Rob did not work on this series. This is just the use of his character. So I digress. Go to Rob's observations maybe to find out what he thoughts and feelings are about Bloodstrike being used. But I digress. We also get characters in here that seem like they're homages to Robert Kirkman's Invincible storyline too. One of the villains that shows up in the story, of course, also is Mary Lovecraft, who we last saw at the end of the 15th anniversary of Hack Slash one shot, which was just like 5 years ago. So, and that was like a part of the big break that Tim Seeley had working on Hack Slash. One of the taglines at the back of the issue is, "When the Slashers stalk the heroes of the Image Universe, they turn to Cassie Hack, and she hates it." And she absolutely does this. She's basically reluctant to have to work with these heroes through the entire series, and she's not a team player, nor is she a comic book team-up kind of person. But I do love the entire one-page spread. If you check out page part 5, Seeley, Leister, Russell, and Crank, as the Image Universe characters Cassie and Vlad take on the various slashers, which I think is really cool. At the very end of the story, we have art by Django Carreño, which has Cassie leaning on the head of the Clown Violator, which would have been really cool to see show up in here, but I digress. We unfortunately did not. A Cassie Spawn team up would be something incredible. In the back of the issue, we do have the ads for Hack Slash Back to School and the Hack Slash hardcover edition ad for the omnibus that was on Kickstarter, which I highly recommend checking out, as it does collect a lot of the great stories of Hack Slash. I've been led to believe, I think I mentioned this, asked I think I mentioned, I asked Greg about this. The Hack Slash Kill Your Idols does take place after the events of the 15th anniversary special and is the up-to-date current Hack Slash continuity. Riz Back to School does take place after My First Slasher and the Vlad introduction one shot. All in all, I did wait a year to cover this just because I didn't pick up the individual issues of the Image comic book, collecting them all in like 6-page formats each. I knew this was probably going to happen, and I reached out to Tim asking, "Hey, are all those little mini stories parts going to get collected?" And he said, "Yep." And so I decided to wait. Sure enough, they did. This past April, as part of the 20th anniversary. It's still available at your local comic shop. I highly recommend checking it out. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Chris Crank, and please rate the podcast 5 stars. If you'd like to send me an email, thatradiohorror@gmail.com, or leave a comment on the website, radiohorror.com, please do. You can follow me on Twitter @gothgirlhorror, and we'll be back next month as we start coverage on Hack Slash Back to School. Please also don't forget to check out my interview coming up with one of the models from Hack Slash, a long time long and waiting model that we wanted to have on the show for quite some time, and we finally have a chance to interview her. Thank you, everyone.